Welcome back to Queer Talk. My name is Matthew Stafford. I'm your host today. And today we're talking about an upcoming National Geographic documentary called American Transgender. And I have on in our interview today with me Eli Strong, who is a participant in the documentary. Eli, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Great. So, Eli, tell all our listeners a little bit, I guess, first of all, your understanding of the background of what the documentary is going to be about.
Well, the documentary is it basically just follows three folks, two out in California, Jim and Claire, and myself in D.C., and it just kind of follows us on our regular everyday lives. There's conversations with our family and our friends and significant others, and just you know, not only telling our stories, but I think that it shows just how normal we are, because, you know, there are a lot of people that have never met transgender individuals. And so, you know, there's always that misconception that they must lead either very freakish lives or exciting lives. And while my life is exciting in its own way, I'm a pretty normal and sometimes boring guy.
Well, it must be, I would think that, you know, I've never been asked to be a part of a documentary, but I would think that it would be both exciting, being able to see that there's an opportunity to relate to other people who are going through the same thing, the opportunity to let people know what your own life experience is like. But also, I would think it could be a bit of a challenge thinking, okay, what if, you know, how is my family going to react to seeing this? Or what if people that I work with, how are they going to react? How did that go for you in deciding, you know, how did you put all that together in deciding to participate?
Well, I think that, you know, the first conversation was obviously with my wife, and, you know, I knew that conversation really didn't even have to be had. I had it because I love her, and I wanted to know, you know, what do you think about this? Because, you know, you're going to have cameras in your face as well as mine, and she's always 100% behind me. Mm-hmm. And I really, like you said, I did want that ability to possibly, if I could just reach one person that, you know, could see that, you know, when you're faced with something that you're afraid that your family's not going to be okay with, or that your coworkers or whatever, that it doesn't mean that either your life is over or anything to that nature, but that also that it you can have a great community in it. And so that was the reason why I chose and talked to my mother about it. And then, of course, my next conversation had to be with my mother. My mother is my best friend. I am a classic Southern mama's boy, and mm-hmm. So I gave her a ring, and I told her about the project and the possibility, and she thought that it was great. And then I posed the question of, how would you feel about participating? And at first she was very uncomfortable with it, and not because of the subject matter, but simply because, you know, my mom's kind of a private person. She's very mm-hmm. public when it comes to things she does, like volunteering in business. But when it comes to her personal life, she tends to be kind of private. And the thought of having cameras in her home, I think, was a bit overwhelming at first. And she and I talked about it, and I'd say in less than half an hour, she kind of felt the same way I did, that if even, you know, one set of parents could see, especially from where I'm from, that if one set of parents could see that just because you have a child that may realize that they're transgender, it doesn't mean that it has to be a horrible road. It doesn't mean that it has to affect your relationship in a negative way. My mother and I are closer every day because of the things that she and I kind of have gone through. So mm-hmm. after that, she was really on board, and she was amazing, and sat down with them and did an interview, and, you know, they talked to all of our family, and so it was really kind of a great experience for all of us.
Great. And you grew up in Alabama, right?
I did.
And do you get back there often, too?
You know, not obviously as much of a family-oriented person as I am, not as often as I'd like to, but I would say that I probably get back there a few times a year. Mm-hmm. The year of the filming last year was probably one of the highest rates of me going home in one year since I've lived here in D.C. in the last 7.5 years or so, simply because of my wedding and holidays and filming, and so there was a lot of chance to see my family, which was really good.
Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about your own personal story. When did you realize you were transgender? What was that like? And what was it like growing up in Alabama at the time and putting all of that together?
I'll say that me realizing that I was transgender, you know, at the time I would have said it was a slow process. But now looking back on it, I feel like that, you know, I'm definitely not one of those people that said I knew that I was a boy from when I was very little. What I can say is that even as young as 5, 6 years old, there were other people asking me to my face, other children my age asking me, are you a boy or a girl?
Mm-hmm.
And that was confusing, especially since all the look on their face showed me that I had to be careful of my answer. And so I was fearful of that. And then, you know, as I got older, there were still times where I was asked that question, and it was usually by the same age children, even though I had gotten older. You know, children at that certain age are just kind of putting together the way they see the world and mm-hmm. what makes the difference between a boy and a girl. And
right.
when it's not clear cut, that's a little bit more difficult. And
right.
in the state of Alabama, unlike being up here in D.C., gender variance is something that doesn't happen that often. And so I, you know, that was something that at times I feared for my own safety because, you know, if someone called me ma'am or sir, whatever they said, I went with it, you know, because I would rather them think that whatever box I fit into in their head, I figured that was the safest place to stay.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was 16, I realized that I really was attracted to women, and so I thought that, and I didn't really have a name for that at the time, and so once I started figuring out what that meant, I figured, oh, well, lesbian means you're a female that likes other females, so I guess that's what I am. And I became very active in the queer community and started with the help of some friends, a couple of organizations at the University of Alabama, mm-hmm. and was very active in those. And the more I educated myself in order to run some of these organizations, the more I started to find that the word transgender really kind of felt right. But due to the fear I had of being in Alabama with that kind of thought and really understanding what that meant, because I mean, I had no idea really what that meant. I had a textbook definition. To me, at, you know, 20 years old at UA, transgender meant those were the people that, you know, it was always men that changed to women, and usually it was something that was horribly looked down on, and it meant that you always knew that you were the opposite sex, not that it was something that, you know, gender can be fluid.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't quite understand it, and I only used that word with people that I was comfortable with. You know, people that I trusted. And so I kind of, for a little bit, because it was comfortable to hold on to the past, you know, you never want to let go of that thing that keeps you comfortable. And my security blanket at the time was being a member of the lesbian community. And so mm-hmm. I identified as both trans and lesbian for a while. And when I moved up to D.C. and really had a chance to get away from the fear that I had and had a chance to really start to live my life and talk to people, I really realized that the reason I hadn't been happy for so long, even though I kept immersing myself in my queer community and doing all the things, you know, activism and volunteering that normally would have made me happy, and it wasn't, it was because that this was, you know, the fact that I was attracted to women was just a small part, and the fact that I slapped a big label of lesbian on it
mm-hmm.
just didn't cover up what the real issue was. And so it took me a long time once I realized that in my head to admit it out loud. To other people. And it was basically just from then what felt like a slow progression, but it was actually pretty quick within about 3 to 4 years with all of my friends. I'd changed my name and my pronouns. And at the end of that 3 to 4 year period of just kind of seeing what kind of person do I want to be, I was able to, you know, go through some of the physical transition with starting hormones and having surgery and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that your mom is your best friend. What was it like to, I'm assuming you came out to her as a lesbian first at some point, and then to come out to her again, what was that like?
Yeah, it was, the second time was scary. I mean, you know, I would have thought that the first time would have been scarier because I was 16 and I was living under her roof, but I didn't have much of a choice in that coming out. She actually, and she talks about this in the documentary, she saw me kiss the girl that I was dating at the time, and it was 3 days after this other person and I kind of admitted it to ourselves that we were attracted to each other and mm-hmm. that we wanted to try this, you know, let's date and see what happens. Are we nuts here? And, you know, it was it was hard for both of us because I wasn't even really ready to deal with anybody else knowing myself. I mean, right. It's been 3 days. And so when she found out, it was a very emotional time. And I think that neither one of us knew how to deal with it. And we weren't on the best of terms always during that because, you know, turmoil kind of doesn't always bring out the best right immediately. Mm-hmm. And so when it came time for me to tell her that I was transgender, I was afraid. And my way of preparing for the worst was to convince myself over about a month's time or so, can I live without her if she walks away? And by this time, she had become my best friend even before knowing that I was trans, and it was scary. It was probably the longest 20-minute phone conversation I've ever had in my life. It felt like hours. And at the end of it, she just kind of said, you know, that it wasn't the deepest shock in the world, that it was surprising, but that she had seen movies and seen things in the media and wondered if that was her baby. And, you know, my mother and I have always had this very close connection. Our birthdays are one day apart. We always kind of know what's going on with each other. Mm-hmm. And I hadn't been sleeping well, and I think she could kind of feel that. And she said, I just want you to get a good night's sleep tonight because I know you and you probably haven't slept in a while, have you? I said, no. And she said, just know, go to sleep tonight knowing that your mother still loves you and she's still here for you and you're still my baby. And it was like an anvil had been lifted off my shoulders. The next day was probably the best day I'd had in 6 months.
Mm. Was it ever as painful or as difficult to go through that process with other members of your family, or was it sort of like, you know, your mother was the person who mattered the most, and so the others maybe didn't matter to get their approval so much?
Well, I mean, okay. That almost feels like a loaded question of was she the most important? To a certain degree, yes, she was the most important. And the reason why was because we talked every day. She was my best friend, and also I feel like that her reaction to it and the way she showed her family the way she was reacting to it would affect the way that other folks in the family reacted to it. Not that anyone in my family would have been like, ugh, no, I'm not dealing with this. Mm-hmm. But I feel like she made it so much easier for them to go, okay, well, this is just the way things are because Mona's okay with it. And that's Eli's mom. So obviously then we can all deal with this. But was it that easy for everyone? No, it wasn't. And my father, it wasn't that easy for him. And that's not because, you know, my father is a bad person. My father is not as talkative as my mom, and he doesn't express his emotions as much as my mother does. And mom and I kind of just know each other, whereas dad and I know each other when it comes for Alabama football and holidays and things like that. But we don't talk about everything that goes on in our days. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when he found out, it was harder for him to talk about. And he actually, you know, I told mom on the phone, I sent my father a letter because I wanted to give him the time to process it. Mom's the type of person where she wants to talk that out immediately. I felt like my dad probably wanted some time to try to process on his own before he felt pressured to react a certain way. And I wanted to be respectful of that. And I wanted to give him that privacy and that time. And so I sent him a letter. And I think that it was very difficult for him to deal with. And he kind of didn't respond for a while. And I guess after about 6 months, I called him and said, all right, what's up? Because I sent you a really heavy letter and I haven't heard from you. And we talked about it then, and he did, you know, he was raised in a very Baptist mm-hmm. household in Alabama, and so it was difficult for him. When my mother was pregnant with me, he prayed for a girl, and I talked to mom about that, and she said he did. And, you know, when you were born, you were just everything he wanted. And it's not that I'm not now. He and I have talked about it. We've, you know, He called me his son when we were in New Orleans at the national championship game. I mean, he and I have a good relationship. It's just different.
Mm-hmm.
So
interesting. So what was it like to go from being heavily identified? You said you'd been very involved in LGBT community
yes.
roles and organizations. What was it like to have been so very identified as a lesbian and with, you know, knowing so many people who all knew you as lesbian, to then go, well, there's that's not all of it. There's something more. What was it like to go through that publicly?
Well, I think that, I mean, it was interesting. For some of my lesbian friends, it was like the worst response I got was, dang it, now I got to change your name in my song. And very supportive and wonderful. But there, I did have a lot of backlash. And so I think that the two hardest things about identifying so strongly and for so long as a lesbian, I lived in the lesbian community for almost a decade. Part of that time identifying is also trans and part of it not. And so the two hardest things about that was, one, identifying as such a strong feminist lesbian for so long, it was really kind of hard internally without anyone else judging, public or private. It was weird at first trying to transition into more of a being seen in society as male, being seen as a white male that, you know, never has any problems and you've probably never seen discrimination and all that kind of stuff, as well as the fact that, you know, I have a minor in women's studies. And, you know, so, you know, I spent all this time in a female community and, you know, feeling both like I wasn't included as well as maybe I shouldn't be because now I'm male. It was a gear shift being so strongly identified as female and strong female, and because that was what I felt like I should be. Because I hated being female so much. I could not stand it when someone called me a girl. I couldn't stand it when they called me a lady. And coming from Alabama, those are the terms you have. And so I felt like I was never a lady. I felt like I was never a woman. I started calling myself a female because I felt like it was the most clinical term possible. And so, you know, I tried to identify very strongly as female, try to get over that little hump of why am I so uncomfortable. And so transitioning out of that was kind of hard. And then the other hard thing that was more public was that actually the most backlash I got as far as people saying you're not really a man, or you just need to understand that you're a woman, or you know whatever, came from the lesbian community. I had a lot of lesbians, both friends and acquaintances, that told me, you know, God, you trans men, you're stealing all our good butches. And
interesting.
Confused by that. I had several of them tell me, once you realize that you can be any kind of woman you want to be, you won't want to be a man. And I was like, but that's the point. It doesn't matter what kind of woman I can be. I'm not. I just don't feel, I'm not comfortable that way. And so I did get a lot of backlash from that. Some of it downright nasty, and some of it directed at my wife when we were just dating. You know, when I wasn't around, it was, where's your girlfriend? And she's like, he's sick. And they would look at her and go, well, you know what I mean. We both know that, you know, she's really a girl.
Interesting.
And my wife was like, actually, no, I don't know that. I don't know where you're getting that from. So, it was kind of an interesting gear shift. But not to say that that's always the way it is. I had a lot of amazingly supportive people in the lesbian community, and still a good chunk of my friends are lesbians.
Interesting. You mentioned having a minor in women's studies. I actually had double majored in I majored in sociology and women's studies.
Oh, did you?
And so I was going to ask you, when you mentioned that, did you face any issues, backlash in any kind of academic setting, maybe after you transitioned, when it came to owning the term feminist? You know, have you seen any backlash to that, as far as if people think it's okay for you to consider yourself feminist if you're not female?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I didn't necessarily or directly, when it comes to the feminist label, I didn't really catch that backlash, especially not from the academic world, because it really wasn't until I moved up to D.C. that I really started openly embracing, you know, different things about me without, you know, just kind of hiding them in a closet. And so when I was at Alabama, I didn't have to worry about that, because to the outside world, I just appeared to be a lesbian that, with a few people, said, oh, well, I'm trans, but only because my gender doesn't exactly fit with what society says a girl's gender should fit into. So I didn't experience a lot of that. By the time I got up here to D.C., a lot of the D.C. folks that were academics that I ran in circles with, both at internships and jobs and things like that, were very much embracing of men being feminists, especially if they walked the walk and not just talked the talk. You know, when I transitioned on the job at my previous position, I was at NARAL Pro-Choice America for about 4 years. And so, you know, it was actually a very supportive environment. There were a few people that didn't quite get it, but usually the people that were my age or maybe a decade above or below me, really kind of, it was the new feeling of feminists are, it doesn't really matter who you are or what gender or sex you are, but it's about just knowing that women aren't doormats and that we're all equal. And so I really didn't experience that backlash. Now, had I done that in Alabama, it's possible.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. What kinds of things, what kind of teaser can you give about the documentary for people who are interested in seeing it? Are there any sorts of, like, some interesting things that people are going to notice or that they should be looking for when they see this?
You know, I think that I can't really obviously speak for the other two-thirds of the show with Jim and Claire, but as far as mine, I've had a few people who have seen different clips and read blogs and have asked me, how do you feel about how they've portrayed you as just this hardcore Alabama fan? And do you feel like they've kind of fanaticized you? And I went, absolutely not. I mean, it was 100% true. Everything. I mean, that was me on a light day. I mean, what they show is nothing. It shows one little piece of a game. And as my wife can tell you, life revolves around Alabama football in the fall. But I think that the other thing that's really important is that, and my mother said this very well, was that it really doesn't matter. I think that the big shocker that people find about me is that I come from a Southern Italian Catholic family where I'm pretty much the only Democrat in the state of Alabama, and I'm transgender. And wow, how is your family still okay with this? And as my mother very eloquently put, you can be a Southern, Catholic, whatever kind of family, but it's all about family and love. And that's all there is to it.
Mm, very well put. Eli Strong you're going to be on the new National Geographic documentary, American Transgender. Thanks so much for taking your time to be with us on the program today.
Absolutely. Thank you.